Oh, gracious, this is even more gross than my book, In Cold Blood. Here comes the Colonel.
Yeah, never fails. These people auditioning for Comedy Central, the studio down the hall, sneak in here and act up in the place. Well, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our visit with Steve Smith, the Director of Disaster Planning and Risk Management at the U.S. Small Business Administration. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information here on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, of course, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain because we threw in the coins. The spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Oh, yes, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's one for you. Have you been paying close attention to the activities of NASA on this program? You will be able to tell us how many flights did the first space shuttle Enterprise make into space? Huh? The first space shuttle Enterprise. How many times did the Enterprise go into space?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell me.
The spirit of the fountain has been paying attention to the Science News Radio Network. How many flights did the first space shuttle Enterprise make into space? The answer is none. Zero. Zilch. Never went into space. Okay. All right. All you NASA buffs out there who knew the answer to that question, on with our program. You make perfect sense, and I must tell you that, when I was a kid, I can remember the biggest lie that was ever given to me. And I believed it when I was a kid, and I've come to learn differently. But the big lie was, and you may recognize this, the big lie was, build a better mousetrap, and the world will beat a path to your door. And I found out that that is a big, big lie, because there's plenty of great mousetraps, but if you don't get the word out, and people don't know about it, and you don't promote it, and you don't make it be well-known, nobody's going to beat a path to anything. So,
you know, I always try to follow up when I hear things, and I hear people tell me things. They'll say, I talk about that power chip from the small company in Fargo, North Dakota, and they'll say, oh, well, that's just like Company X or Company Y, and they're the big companies that are selling things to somebody. And I had another thing, which this is actually before I joined SBA, in the private sector, working with a handheld explosive detector, which was had DARPA technology. DARPA had developed the technology. It was from MIT. It was extraordinary stuff, but it never made a transition from development to a program of record, the Valley of Death, as we've called it. It never made that Valley of Death transition. So the company was out trying to sell it. And they were trying to sell it to bomb squads. And if I even think something is a bomb, I'm going to treat it as a bomb.
Yeah.
So we started talking about, well, how can we better apply this? And the company I was working with at the time, we had a number of special ops folks who worked with us, and they said, well, why don't you use it to break the chain from the bomb to the bomber? And this thing is just extraordinarily sensitive. It is as sensitive as a dog's nose. So it can detect who's handling explosives, transporting explosives, building bombs, planting bombs. And so a friend of mine was a Marine. I'm leaving names out intentionally here. I was a Marine general in Iraq at the time, and I sent him an email, and I got a note back like 8 hours later and said, go see Colonel so-and-so at the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab. So we go down there, and we're briefing them with the company, and the company is talking about the technology and stuff, which is interesting to the technologists, but the guys in the green suits are not interested. And I reached over and touched two TNT end caps, which we had sitting on the table, and touched my sleeve, and the guy with me, again, we hadn't rehearsed this, he touches it, and then he touches this Marine, and we pick the device up and push it over on the Marine, and it goes off the scale.
Ooh.
I don't know what Major so-and-so is doing, but he's in contact with somebody who's handling explosives. And I said, shake hands with me. So the guy shakes hands with me. And now hold your hand out. And now the thing goes off scale on his hand.
Wow.
Shook hands with me. So it's extraordinarily sensitive, and people have to be trained on it because it's so sensitive that, and the question I asked my general friend, wouldn't you like to have this at an infantry checkpoint so you know who you should detain rather than just because you don't like the way they look? You have some, objective reason that you want to detain them.
Sure.
Well, some people will say, well, you know, it's giving us false positives. This is a child that came through the checkpoint, and he's coming up positive. Well, the child is probably in a house where they're making bombs, and he's touching the surfaces where the bombs are being made. So it requires some training in the application. But so the long story short was DOD bought the much larger number of these before than they had previously, just by changing the application.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a big company. It was a small company in Oklahoma City at the time. They've now been bought and acquired by, I guess twice by two bigger
sure.
fish swallowed them up.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a small company, and, we have to, you're building the better mousetrap. Somebody will say, we've been building mousetraps for years. That doesn't mean there's not some small company out there that doesn't have a better technology and a better idea. But it's very, very difficult for them to break in and get the attention to do that. And I certainly appreciate the challenges that they have in DOD with this. I've never been a technology program manager, but I was a training program manager back in the 80s. And I simply did not have the capacity to evaluate all the great things which people would bring to me. So you said something a few minutes ago, talking about the ability to evaluate. I forget the exact words you used, but we kind of talked about it like proof of concept center or something, where somebody
sure.
can prove the concept outside of DOD,
mm-hmm.
prove a concept that this integration of technology really works and bring it together. Because if I'm a program manager in DOD, I don't have time necessarily to do that. And the challenge we face today is, I'm sure, if you've heard of the OODA loop, haven't you?
The what?
The OODA loop, O-O-D-A.
No, you sprung one on me, and I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, it's a military term, and it means observe, orient, decide, and act, O-O-D-A.
Okay.
So if you're in a situation, you have to observe what's happening, you have to orient yourself about what this is going on in the situation, you have to decide what you're going to do, and then you're going to act. And if your enemy can defeat your OODA loop, where he is throwing things at you faster than you can observe, orient, decide, and act, he's going to beat you. And basically, in our technology development day, our technology, as advanced and beautiful and wonderful as it is relatively slow in development. So our enemies they're observing what we're doing, they're orienting, they're deciding, and they're acting, and they're doing it quicker than we can respond with our technology response to what they're doing. And we need to figure out how to speed up that technology OODA loop in order to defeat our enemies. And we just don't have the long timelines which we used to have to develop. I was a commanding officer for an Aegis cruiser. I mean, that's just exquisite technology. I can't tell you how good that is. But it took a long time to develop it and get it out there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that we do know that protection. It's defense oriented because we don't know what kind of an attack we're going to get, and they only have to win. Well, I've been told by people I've interviewed on this radio program, they only have to win once. We've got to win all the time to defend ourselves against these attacks. And so, yeah, this makes a great deal of sense.
That's absolutely a correct observation. It's very true.
So, with this great program And it is a great program, and you've been developing it for just a bit. And my question to you earlier is how you're going to get the word out. And you said you were going to look for people like me to help you do it, and I'm glad to do that. But I'm wondering if maybe, getting the word out to the chambers of commerce, getting the word out of, I'm sure you're already to the universities, because that's the place where they need the most help. These people in the universities are all eggheads, pointy heads, who don't understand that you got to market this stuff. They come up with this stuff, but they don't know how to market it. So I'm sure that's probably really vital ground for you. But what else are you doing?
Well, we have a group which we've been working with, and I'm going to look at something and see if I can remember the name. I'm embarrassing myself. It's a network of state and colleges and folks that facilitate this type of development. Mm-hmm. And I'm just having I'm having an over 50 moment here, and I just can't remember the name of the group. But our clusters have met with other clusters and met with state innovators to try to pursue this stuff. But it's not, it's the people who are developing these things. So the thing which is the real challenge is to get it to the market, to the customer. And that's what we really need to figure out how to do, is get it to cluster, get the cluster approach to the customers. And I'm just thinking out loud, which is always dangerous when you do that. But one of my first company after I retired from the Navy was a venture capital funded firm, and one of my venture capitalists told us that we only have to really hit it big on 1 out of 10. Mm. And I've heard that a number of times since then.
Oh, sure.
You've probably heard it before too.
Oh, yeah.
And well, suppose you could hit it big on 2 or 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that really make your venture capital fund much more valuable to investors who are putting the money into it? And when you're investing in something, you have to do due diligence. So you're still going to have to do due diligence. But what about using the clusters for what I call pre-due diligence? These clusters, they know their industry. They know the applications. They know the folks, and they can tell you. It's very difficult when you're working with DOD because, DOD, you don't know what's innovative in DOD. It may have been innovative 6 months ago and it's not innovative now.
Oh,
and you just don't
know.
They're not telling you. So a lot of folks, investors, are reluctant to invest in defense things because they view it as it's not diversified enough. It can just be killed by the axe of killing one program. Mm-hmm. And you don't really know whether it's innovative or not. And the small companies, when they look at stuff, they don't know how their particular technology or component is going to be integrated into what the larger need is. Mm-hmm. So if you had some group like the clusters who could help you assess that, I mean, nothing is guaranteed in venture capital. But it would give you a lot better sense that the companies that you were investing in really had something that there was there for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's right. You've got with technology changing so rapidly, things that come on the market are almost obsolete the moment that they hit the market things. So the investors, venture capitalists, all have to look at that, and that's really a difficult choice. But you are providing funding from the Small Business Administration. So
yes, we are, and there's a lot of things which people don't appreciate all that SBA does, but we're providing funding which is in the terms of hundreds of thousands of dollars to each of the clusters. It's not a big program, and I'm saying a few hundreds of thousands to each of the clusters, depending mm-hmm. on the services and stuff which they provide.
Sure.
But you also have the power of SBA's network, and I wish somebody told me this when I was running a small business. So you have folks, they can, if they're unable to get credit elsewhere, they can go out and they can get credit, through the SBA Guaranteed Lending Program, mm-hmm. Where we guarantee some percentage, depending upon the different programs, it can run anywhere from 75% or higher. We will guarantee the loan amount. It's actually lending by a commercial bank with an SBA guarantee. So if you get a small company which is unable to get credit elsewhere, You may have a bank which says, well, this is a company which they don't have much of a track record yet. They're just getting started. But with the SBA guarantee, we're willing to take a risk and lend them money. We also have a network of over 1,000 different outlets, actually, of resource partners, we call them. And those are the small business development centers around the country. And those are essentially, I may not get this exactly right, but they're, many of them are triple funded. They're funded, some funding comes from SBA, some funding comes from their states, and some funding comes from the colleges and universities where they're typically located. But they provide, no cost or very low cost, business counseling and training to folks. And they help them do things which you really need if you're going to do serious business with the government. They'll help you teach you how to prepare or establish DCAA, Defense Contracting Audit Agency compliant accounting systems. They can show you how to get a facility clearance, how you can get security clearances for your personnel if you need that for working on particular contracts. They can help you develop business plans. You may have someone who's developed a great piece of technology, but they really don't know, A, how it's going to be applied, what their competition is, who they're going to sell it to. And these counselors, and I'm going to include, there's a volunteers SCORE, which is the old acronym was Service Corps of Retired Executives, I believe they're now called. Yeah, they're now called Executives in Service to America or something like that.
Yeah, old-timers with nothing else to do but have all this experience and think that they can pass on. It really is.
But they do, and that's free, and that comes through from working with SBA and working working through our network. We can help you get the capital and the counseling and the help that you need to put your business together smartly. Mm-hmm. Rather than going out and just seeing how many mistakes you can make and keep trying. I mean, I ran a couple small businesses, and I know I shake my head sometimes at the mistakes that I made that I wouldn't have made if I had been working with SBA.
So people that really want to get started in a business or bring something to market or do something that's innovative, right now can be well received if they get to the SBA. They don't have to worry about long applications and months of delay and the strains that have once plagued dealing with the SBA. But the SBA is ready and with open arms to hear new ideas and these new businesses. Is that the takeaway that we want to get out?
That's a good takeaway, and we're aware that we need to streamline and make our systems more efficient. And under the guidance of our current administrator, Maria Contreras-Sweet, we really have been. She was a community banker at one point in her career, and one of the things we've really done is streamlining our application processes and try to be much more speedy in getting decisions and getting funding to folks who need it.
All right, that's great. Steve, we're going to have to kind of wind it down here just a little bit, but I wonder if maybe you'd put on your thinking cap for a minute and look into the future for us, maybe 5 or 10 years or so. Do you have a vision for the future, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road? Where do you see us going as a country?
Well, I see the country is going well, despite all the political rhetoric which you see. I think America, obviously, it's a great country. It's the greatest country ever, and we have the ability to weather all these things and continue to develop. I really can't prognosticate on stuff like that, but let me talk about the clusters a little bit. I really think there is an opportunity, and I'm going to go back to that network word that we talked before. One of the things which we have been actively developing and working on in the last couple years, is the last year or so particularly, is cross-cluster collaboration. And like I said, there was 3 initial defense clusters, and we're up to about 7 now. They're not specifically focused on defense, but they have technology which can be applicable to defense. So, we have a maritime cluster and a geospatial cluster, and we're working together They're trying to do that fine filter to facilitate. So if you look at the mass of technology that we have in this country, which in the innovation is just astounding. So what everybody tends to do is they tend to rely on the internet. So you put things out on the internet asking for information, and you're relying on the information which comes back. If you send something out on the internet, it's kind of like NASA sending something out to deep space. You don't know who's going to receive it, and you don't know if they do receive it, if they're going to understand it. And you can go on some websites, for DOD is a good example. They have some marvelous websites. I mean, they're rich in information and material. But if you're a small business, you can look at that stuff and your eyes will glaze over because you don't know, well, where can my technology possibly come in? Where can my technology be applied to this? So you have an inefficient way of finding technology. So there's everybody talks about, DOD puts out a fire hose of information and nobody can digest it all. Well, the volume of information that DOD and other agencies have to deal with coming back in, it's kind of like a waterfall. I mean, there's way too much for any agency to be able to effectively, digest this. Or the market. The market, of course, is dynamic. It's self-correcting. It does what the right thing is eventually. But if there's ways that we can figure out how to find technology innovation and apply technology innovation and get it to the right people, I think we can take some of the talent in this country and really, ramp up what we've been able to do with it.
All right, Steve, that's fascinating stuff. And one more thing before we get out of here. I know that you've been mentored by people, certainly with your long career in the Navy, and you've mentored others. How about a word to live by, a kind of a living creed or something like that, something that that you'd like to pass on to a younger person or something that you believe yourself when you deal with other people? Do you have a creed to live by?
I don't really have a creed. I wish I could tell you something, a few words. You've probably learned in the last 45 minutes we've talking that I probably talk too much. But, it's just, it's all about teamwork. It's all about teamwork and networks, and it's people who really make the difference. These clusters, the ones that work well, they work well because they have a core of just a few really good, talented people. I will always hire the best athlete. I don't hire somebody just because they happen to have skill in squash or volleyball or whatever it is. I hire the person who I think can do any job regardless of whatever it is. And that's just an extraordinary talent, and just enable those folks and get out of their way. And, the best thing you can do, and this goes back from my time in the Navy, the best thing you can do is create an organization which functions well when you're not there. And the most efficient organizations are the ones that function the best when the boss isn't there. Those are the ones that I really highly regard. So that's what we're trying to do with the clusters. We're trying to create the clusters so that they can get up and they can just completely run on their own because there's so much potential there.
Well, Steve, you've been a fascinating guest, and we thank you so much. Really looking forward to hearing you at the 2016 IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in Boston on May 10, 11, and 12. And remind people that if they want to know more about
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Security is a process, okay? And the instant you think that you've mastered it and you're completely invulnerable, that's the point at which you have a problem. Like if you think you're invulnerable, you have a problem. Professor George Markowski, director of the University of Maine Cybersecurity Lab at the University of Maine.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you.